Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
We've started. This is the beginning of the show. It's 2 o'clock. It's time to get funky. But it's 2 o'clock on a Wednesday, which means it's 12 o'clock on a Friday, which also means it's anytime you like, anywhere you like, on a podcast. You're listening to Five Star Family Fun Size Fan Club. Press the ident, Natalie. This is the start of the fucking show. We've started. I mean, I didn't make the rules that we start at two. You made them at midday. You made the rules. Have you pressed it? So, you've muted yourself. We can't hear it. It's a 5 second ident. It's over now. Welcome to the show. My name is Nick, and this is
Nathaniel Metcalf.
And you're listening to Five Star Family Fun Size Fan Club to get that Friday fix in lockdown.
Have you got that Friday feeling, Nick?
No, what I do feel is that it's a gloriously sunny day. I've closed my blinds. Do you know what? After this, in 2 hours' time, we're doing 2 hours this week, guys. In 2 hours' time, I'm going to reorganise this my spare room so that it's actually practical and I can use it for good rather than evil.
Evil have you been using it for?
Just storing stuff.
Doesn't look messy from here.
That's because I've tidied up that one bit. But look, it's literally you can't walk around. I'm wearing a ring as well. This was a ring that I wore in the TV series Loaded, and it's a ring within a ring. So it spins around. You see.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I wore it on this thumb in the show. No, I didn't. I wore it on this finger in the show, and I used to spin it. Like it was a six shooter.
Were you like Steve McQueen in The Magnificent Seven? Were you doing that to pull focus?
Yeah, to pull focus in all the scenes. Yeah. So I was always doing that, right, in every single shot. And I loved it so much that they got me one. I mean, it's like a cheap piece of shit from wherever, but they got me one, a spare one to keep. Yeah. I was talking to someone on the phone the other day, and I stuck it on my finger, and my finger's too fat, and I can't get it off again. I don't want to live with this one. This is my most used finger. I use it for communicating with people and fucking them. So I don't want to use that.
Frowned upon if you don't communicate with them first.
You know, that's how you do it, I guess.
Flipping the bird, as they say. Flipping the bird's an odd term, isn't it?
Flipping the bird. Why is it called a bird? Is it because it's like... I've always thought it's because it's like a bird on a telegraph line.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Talking of that, should I have people are saying nature are returning and all
there
that? Should I have people are saying nature is returning and there's lots of, like, clear water and clear skies when no one's been going out?
Yeah.
Well, I hung my washing up today before the show, and I saw a robin perched on top of my pants on my washing line. So that was beautiful.
So what are you saying? Nature is returning?
Yeah. Got a bird perched on my pants.
Mm. Sure. It's a bit like 12 monkeys, isn't it?
Very much like 12 monkeys. Very much like 12 monkeys.
There's a lion. Is it in Philadelphia? Is that where it's filmed? Is that where it's meant to be?
I don't know, actually. I like 12 Monkeys.
I think it's Philadelphia. I like 12 Monkeys. I saw it at the cinema. My dad took me to it at the cinema. I like 12 Monkeys, but not sure about watching it now in these troubled times. But, like, Contagion is, like, in the top 10 of things that people are watching on Netflix.
Yeah. Last night, there was after News Night, which was incredibly depressing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and now we're going to have... a documentary about concentration camp, and I was thinking, put something else on. Like, just put something on. Put like just like put a Scooby-Doo on or something.
What channel was that? ITV?
BBC2 after News Night. I went,
well, this is BBC, all we've got. BBC don't DC don't have the rights to Scooby-Doo, do they? So come on, think logically.
Yeah, what would they be able to ban?
Everything else has been sold to Netflix, so all they have is Holocaust documentaries. So my name is Dick Helm. This is Nathaniel Metcalf.
Yeah.
You're listening to Fan Club. What's the first rule of Fan Club?
Tell your friends about Fan Club.
Simple as that. Just simple. Plain and simple. What's the second rule of Fan Club?
Please, for the love of God,
tell your friends about Fan Club. So
it's harder to do that now, though, isn't it? It is harder, I guess.
I think it's easier, if anything. I've literally talked to... I haven't talked to my friends. I don't think I've talked to my friends particularly more. I've definitely talked to my family a lot more. If not every day, then almost every day.
It's true, yeah.
That's good.
I'm calling my mum and dad every day.
That's good, because, you know, It's weird because, you know, I'll talk to my family like one or two times a week, once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks. I really don't have that much to report most of the time. As listeners of the show will know. And so you sort of like, when you talk to your family like every day, almost every day, you think that those conversations would just be sort of like, like a digest, like it would be down to like a 10-minute chat, and then. But I find that I talk to them for like an hour every time, and it's lovely. Yeah,
that is nice. I think I'm doing a 10 to 15 every day.
Well, that's good as well. But I mean, how often would you normally talk to them?
Maybe once a week. Yeah.
So then you can kind of like break it up. I also feel like it's not like this urgent chat where you need to get everything said in one go. It's like you can just be like, oh yeah, I'm just about to have some dinner. I'm just checking in to see how you're doing.
What do you think is the best way to tell your friends then in this troubling time? Could you shout it at 2 meters distance? Shout at someone.
The odds that you're going to shout... shout at anyone that would be interested in listening to this within 2 meters. Oh,
open your window, scream.
It's like the opposite of rats, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you're never with, what is it? You're always within 2 meters of a rat. but it's not. It's like you're within 1 meter of a rat, aren't you? In London.
Yeah, I think so.
Or 1 foot, or 3 foot, which is basically a meter. Come on, guys. Yeah, I don't know. So, how have you been?
I've been all right. I slipped over on the stairs the other day, and I've bruised my anus, or coccyx, or something. Done something. I mean, it's the worst time to do it, because the only thing we've got to do that the government have advised is to... All you've got to do is sit at home. But it's a bit like, it's easier when I'm stood up and walking about.
Absolutely.
That's how I've injured myself.
But also how you got that carrot stuck up there as well.
That didn't help.
it was like staking a vampire. or it's like a stake in a vampire or carrot in your ass.
I'm doing all right. I think I find self-isolation easier than most, because I'm an indoors person. I'm not someone that goes out a lot. I'm quite happy sat in. You know, the sun's coming through my window in the morning. I don't think, oh, what a beautiful day. I shut my curtains so it doesn't, like, blur the screen. You know, that's sort of what I'm like.
Yeah, I wait for the sun to go down so I can start actually watching films on my screen, because the sun...
It glares. J.J. Abrams film.
I had sort of like a profound realization yesterday. I'm just trying to remember what it was, because I was a bit, I've been drinking. But it was like, I'm thinking about what it is I want out of life, and I feel like while we've been, and I also saw Joe Wells had tweeted something similar, and I think probably a lot of comedians, and probably a lot of people in general. I mean, I am a comedian. We are comedians. It's not like that's a way of thinking, but I mean, I can only really. Also, all of my opinions and everything that I say, it can only be from me. I try and be objective about it, and I try and think about other people's points of view. But at the end of the day, anything that I say can only come from me. So as a comedian, but by all means, apply this to your own life. I've just felt like a lot of the time, I've just been swept along with the fact that we just have to keep moving forward, like we're sharks. You just have to keep moving forward, and if you stop, then you die. And as a result, I've ended up doing stuff that I haven't necessarily wanted to do over the years, or I felt pressured into doing out of fear and panic and all of this other stuff. So, you know, like, for instance, I love performing. I love being on stage. I think travel is just problematic at best for me. And so the idea of going on a tour is sort of like, you go, well, what am I meant to be doing as a comedian? How do I keep moving forward? And how do I keep improving myself as an artist? And so you go on tour, but in actual fact, it's not exactly what I personally would want to do. It's more that is the thing that's expected of me. And a lot of stuff, you know, like certain bits of telly, I've done because I felt like I had to, but while I've been in that moment, I've been incredibly stressed about it. Like mentally ill and stressed about it, and to the point that it's had sort of like an effect on my health, my mental health and my physical health. And now that we've all been told to stop, it's kind of nice to sort of like, What I've liked about it is the fact that I've had all of that outside pressure of going out into the streets and getting on public transport and just having to deal with daily life on that level, which is so sort of intense some days, and I find completely overwhelming. So having that taken away from me has actually given me headspace, and also having kind of like, you know, gigs and having to have, you know, the professional commitments being taken away from me has meant that I've had like some free time to just rethink some things.
I think
that's often a good thing.
Often there's things in comedy that you kind of, yeah, I guess you do, when you sort of feel like someone says, oh, this is an opportunity to do something, and you go, oh, I guess I should do that. And I think perhaps I often think I probably did the opposite, and then often, because I'd always did it alongside having a job, there were things that came up that they said, oh, do you want to do this? And I'd think about it and go, no. And so I'd go, no, thanks. No, I'm all right. So I didn't actually want to do them. I could see that why it would be a good thing to do, but often it would be like, no, I don't think I'd be very good at that. Or I often think that thing about, I think someone else would be better at that than me. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't think I'm the right person.
Oh, yeah. I've had meetings with people, which now seems insane. But I've had meetings with people where they've said, we'd like you to do this. And I've gone, do you know who'd be good at that? And I've gone, Rob Gilbert, get him to, do you know what I mean? It'd be like, just get someone, I could do it, but it'd be a stretch. But do you know who would be exactly right for that?
Yeah, I think that's where I always, my thing is always to go, oh, no, have you thought about this person? They'd be ace for that. Mm. That's not really my thing at all. It's not really what I do. Mm. And in hindsight, sometimes I think, is that like idiotic to do? But I always think like, I actually think like my thing is always like, I want the end product to be better. And you almost want to go, no, I tell you what would be better if someone else did it.
And then I can watch it and I can say, oh no, they've messed it up. I don't know. It's not really specifically that. It's more to do with the fact that we've just been all put on sort of like, everyone except for, you know, key workers. But everyone's been sort of like put on hold, and it just sort of like gives you a breathing room where you don't actually. This has never happened before.
Yeah, and you'll never get it again.
It's never happened for everyone at the same time. So just be able to take a pause. If you go on holiday, you know things are going on without you. You know, I had to make a decision a couple of years ago whether I went on holiday or I did Edinburgh. Do you know what I mean? And I'd done Edinburgh and I didn't want to do Edinburgh. So I didn't do Edinburgh. I took the year off to do writing. But it was, are you going, you know, while I went away and I had a holiday, at the same time, you know, subconsciously, I was aware that there was this whole thing going on at the same time. This whole thing that was creating new comedians, a new generation of comedians were coming up, and people were struggling and having difficult shows or amazing shows. Just this whole, the whole landscape of comedy was being changed in Edinburgh while I was off on holiday. And this is the thing where it's just like, all right, we're not on holiday, but everything is paused. So it's not like you're there going, oh God, everything's changed, you know, what, fear of missing, FOMO. It's not like you're thinking, oh God, it's literally, there's nothing to do, but sort of like, and I'm not saying.
I get that every time I don't go to Edinburgh. I always feel like I'm missing out and I should go. And there is that thing where the world of it does move on and suddenly there's all these younger people that everyone's very excited about. You kind of realise that's how it works, though, and that's the sort of one of the silly things about Edinburgh, where it's all kind of PR-based. And like when I did my first year, it was very easy for my PR to get me press because they can say, this guy's new. You don't know who he is. And the second year, it's like, it's that guy from last year.
And they're like, we're not falling for that one again.
Yeah. Yeah, which was a problem in my case. Yeah. You know, fool me once.
but that's the thing. But that's just the nature of Edinburgh, where the press thing... I mean, it's literally about kind of like constructing a story, some sort of. It's basically for newspapers have to be able to sell a story. You know, they can't just say, "Oh, there's that Nathaniel Metcalf doing another show," because everyone's doing another show.
I know, I understand it, don't you?
But it's not about you. It's just like, what is the angle for these shows? And so they're only going to write about people that they've got an angle for. I got loads of press last year. But like everyone wanted to review me. But I did a thing where I always do a thing where I don't let people in for the first 2 days because the show is shit. So I used my preview days as previews. And then by like the third or fourth day, the show is pretty much up and running. So then you have pressing. So I had fucking tons of press coming. But it's because you hold people back for the first 2 days. And B, it's because I hadn't done Edinburgh for five years or six years? I think it was six years. It was the sixth year. So they had a news story which is sort of like, oh well, this guy's returning to Edinburgh after a break. It might not be the best angle ever, but it's an angle that people can write about other than someone's doing another show. So I think it's not that it's cynical, but I think it's actually really straightforward like that, which isn't just sort of like, you're not, there's so many comedians that that each comedian is not entitled to get coverage in a newspaper, you know, and you have to sort of like think about how you want to get the coverage. But anyway, that's the part. I don't want to think about any of this stuff. Why am I thinking about this stuff? I don't want to. I want to think about being creative. I don't give a fuck about getting press into my shows. And I don't give a, you know, I want to think about how I can best be creative. And best being creative isn't living in a world where I'm terrified and I'm terrified about moving forward or backwards. And it's just like, you know, you're just paralyzed with fear most of the time. Mm. All of your decisions come from the fact with, well, maybe if I do this, more people will see this. And maybe, and actually, I'm just rethinking about how I feel about all of that. But not like loads and loads. I'm just sort of like a lot more relaxed at the moment. That wasn't my epiphany. I've sort of like been treading water, trying to remember it while I'm talking. It's very difficult. But you'll know if you host a radio show or a podcast, very little thinking time. It's just talking.
But what you're saying is when you remove yourself, the you of yourself, you can actually see more of what you want to do rather than you being in the world or you being part of like the rat race of it.
Yeah. When you remove everyone else, then you can, and you just like go, right, well, I'm not missing out on opportunities. I'm not kind of like messing up my future. I'm not kind of like trampling all over a legacy. Or do you know what I mean? Whatever your fears or thoughts are, it's just kind of like when you remove all of that, you can just like go, all right, what am I doing today? Have I got any ideas? Have I got any thoughts? And the fact is, or it's just like have a fallow period where you're just sort of like not thinking about being creative and not thinking about just thinking like I've spent some time with myself, you know, I'm living on my own. And I don't hate my own company, which is a revelation. I used to be scared of sort of like spending time by myself. There'd always be something on in the background. And now it's just kind of like, I'm just sort of like getting used to myself and realizing that I'm not the biggest cunt on the planet. You know what I mean? So it's like, so yeah, so I'm finding it, you know, on a personal level, because you can't, you know, I wouldn't have chosen this. You'd be a psychopath. But now we're all in this situation,
yeah.
And we're all in it together, but we're all in it individually going through our, even if we're living with other people at the time, you know, we're all going through it in our own personal way. And it's just sort of like trying to make the best out of the situation.
And are you treating it like a pause, or are you treating it like I can do something now?
No, I'm not thinking like I can do something now. I'm not taking it as a huge, I feel like this week I'm kicking into gear and I'm doing stuff. But up till now, I've kind of like, at first I was really sort of like beating myself and trying to get stuff done. This is my opportunity. And then I looked around and I saw sort of what that looked like. And I was just like, actually, I don't want to do that. And actually, that's just the same as what it was before this.
Yeah.
Only worse, because you're absolutely, totally reliant on yourself. Oh my God, I need to learn technology so that I can, you know, post videos of myself dancing in my kitchen. And it's just kind of like, I don't feel that need at the moment, you know, 2 weeks time. Although I've got like ideas for stuff that I want to do, but I'm kind of like quite relaxed about it. And but at first, see, I would say for the first couple of weeks, I was ill for 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks I spent going, oh God, got to work out what to do. And then it's just sort of like, actually, that's making me feel awful. And so I stopped thinking about that, and I've stopped thinking about the outside world and all of that, and now I'm just thinking about what it is that I want.
What I
don't want is to be stressed and to be ill all the time like I was before for years and years. I wrote a show about being mentally ill, which you know, we've just had our new dates, and it's for, you know, a year's time. In 1 year I'll be gigging my show from 2019, and it's like, oh God, it's great that we'll be doing, I mean, it might be that show, but I might have written something else by then. But, you know, and it's a show about being mentally ill and being sick and not being able to leave my house. And the funny thing is, now that I'm actually not allowed to leave my house, I'm fine.
I guess you've also, I think sometimes opportunity isn't the best thing either, right? I think opportunity gives you, like, almost gives you more kind of crippling things that you should be doing. Like, sometimes I had that where you'd feel like, well, I really ought to do that because when am I going to get asked to do that again? But I don't really want to do it. I think there's some sort of, there's almost a benefit sometimes in not having that opportunity because I don't have to think that way. I get to do, for the most part, in the kind of stand-up comedy world, I get to do exactly what I want because it's not something I need to rely on or need to go, where's my money coming from? And I think that's lucky in some way. I think I'm quite good at that and saying no to things I don't think I'll be good at. And I try and just do things I think I'll do well with and things I like doing and working with people I like working with. Because if I don't do that, what's the point of doing it? Like, I've had jobs while I've been doing it. And what's the point of making this another job that you feel a bit like, oh, I don't want to go and do that?
Yeah.
It's like, it should be like the fun
thing. It's like, don't make your hobby a career.
Hmm.
There was a boat builder who used to build boats. And then he made it his career. And then he was just worried about where he was going to get wood from the whole time. It's like, yeah, it's like, you can apply that to anything. But I mean, that's lovely. If you're not relying on comedy or whatever as your source of income, then you can literally just do it for yourself. You know what I mean? It's like David Ehrlich always felt like that with Brian Kitton.
Yeah.
He can take it or leave it. Like, it's the best thing you've ever seen. Yeah. Or it's the worst thing you've ever seen. But he can take it or leave it, and he genuinely doesn't seem to give a fuck. You know? But in like a kind of way where you go, that's really interesting.
I definitely drift into bits where I feel more ambitious, and more times when I'm a bit more like, oh, how have I got here? I'm not doing anything. I'm not getting anything done. But then at the same time, I know that someone says, do you want X amount of money to do this gig? And I go, that gig sounds horrible. No.
You couldn't pay me enough to do that.
Yeah. It just doesn't feel like, well, sometimes it's like, oh, then I have that thing like, well, should I learn to do this horrible gig? And you go, why? Just be miserable, have a terrible time, and then go back and go, okay. I understand the thing of it. I think sometimes that is good. And I sort of vacillate between both points and go, actually, maybe I should do that and have a really...
I would say more often than not, the stuff I've done for money or for career reasons is the stuff that I've enjoyed the least.
Yeah.
You know. But you get that with everything.
Mm.
And the world isn't all, you know, sunflowers and butterflies and rainbows where, oh, I'm so lucky. I get to do a job where I enjoy absolutely every fucking thing that I do. I can pick and choose. It's just like, who deserves a fucking life as blessed as that? Every so often, you have to do a talking head anthology show about the 1980s on Channel 5.
Yeah. Right? See, I would like that.
That's part of the give and take of the industry. You know?
So do you think you're coming out of it refreshed with full of ideas and vim?
This?
Yeah.
No, that's literally what I'm saying. I'm not using it for that. I'm not using this time to think about, and it's great that people are doing it, but what I'm saying is I'm not sitting around thinking, how can I improve my career out of this?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I'm sitting around thinking, if I'm thinking about anything, and do you know what? I overthink everything all the time. All the time. You know me. I overthink everything, right? And I'm not at the moment. And do you know what? I'm giving myself a break, ironically, from myself. And that's all I've got. Do you know what I mean?
You found that you actually quite like yourself.
Stuck in this fucking flat by myself sounds like a fucking nightmare. But in actual fact, I'm being kind to myself. I'm not just being kind to myself by like, oh, don't worry about, you know, getting dressed today. But like, just sort of like, I'm doing more valuable work that will benefit me in the long run than writing a coronavirus song that someone will watch. And, do you know what I mean? And then be forgotten about next week. And they'll be like, well, what do I do this week to stay in the... I'm just doing some tweets every day. I'm doing some Instagram every day just because it's sort of sociable. People write to me, I write back. I enjoy communicating. I've always enjoyed communicating with nice fans, nice people. And that's great, but I'm not thinking about the short term and what's happening right now. I'm just thinking about the long term and how do I make a career out of this?
Yeah.
As in, how do I make a career out of... It all happened so quickly. 2006, I did my first gig. It got out of hand. I had three TV series or whatever it was in 2013, 2014. It just, like, went through a massive breakup in 2015. Never got back on my feet about that. And then was just constantly scrambling for the last 5 years, trying to sort of like go, well, maybe if I go over here, maybe if I go over here, and I'm not over my ex, and there was just all of this fucking awful stuff that happened, you know. And at no point did I stop and just sort of like think, I'm just constantly just thinking, throw myself into work, keep moving forward. In actual fact, everything has stopped, you know. And so it's just like, right, okay, well, what is it? And bit by bit, I'm just thinking about what it is that I want. You know, hopefully when we all come out of this, one thing I'll have learned is what stuff I'm happy to turn down.
Yeah.
What stuff I'm happy not to do.
Yeah.
And what stuff in actual fact, if I don't do, will make me happier as a person.
Yeah.
Whether that be specific gigs or, specific events or putting myself in harm's way where I know there are situations that will trigger me and stuff like that. You know, I don't know what it is. I'm thinking about it, but I think that for me at the moment is more valuable than trying to come up with immediate content.
I think you get that with, like, when you see even like the very biggest comedians in the country, it almost feels like their career feels quite prescribed, and it's that thing where all of them do a tour maybe every other year or something.
Every year you do a show, every year you keep it going. Yeah. And it's sort of like, that first Edinburgh was amazing. And maybe the second show was good. But then the third to the fourth, I really felt like the pressure of doing Edinburgh every year. My shows got bigger and bigger and bigger. To the point where, you know, I was making them in my garage. It wasn't like I had a team of people helping me. My shows got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it's just kind of like, I'm talking about me. I think that... You know, if you're one of the best shows I've done was Phoenix from the Flames last year that is back on tour, back on sale, or the dates have moved or whatever. But that's one of the best shows I've done. That's absolutely because I wasn't concentrating on cranking out a show every year. It was literally, I allowed myself to grow as a performer. And then I sort of like went back at it and was just like, oh, this is who I am now.
Yeah,
I sort of rediscovered myself through the show.
And also, I think enough time was passed that people weren't comparing you to your last show. They're comparing all of everything you've done. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's more like...
That whole thing is just, is bollocks anyway. You know, my favourite show before then was my 2012 show, This Means War, which got so many 4-star reviews, never a 5. They got so many 4-star reviews that you couldn't see the poster, right? And then the next year, Bruce Dessau called it disappointing. And you go, yeah. And I know how many 4-star shows. You got 11 4-star reviews. And you go, disappointing. And that's because it was followed up. It was following up This Means War.
You get to do that thing where you do a kind of thing. People go, this is great. I've never seen something like this before. Then you do another thing that's also by you, and people go, oh, yeah, no, I've seen him do this type of thing. Yeah. I've seen this before. Then you go, yeah, of course you have.
That's what I do.
Yeah, that's what they do.
That's what I do. You don't go into McDonald's and go, oh, burgers, again. It's like, that's what you go for.
You had burgers last night.
Oh, I went to see Jimmy Carr the other night. It was just more one-liners. And you go, yeah, you know, they were different one-liners, though, weren't they? Yeah. Like, they're different songs. Yeah. They're different insults. They're different set pieces. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, it's a different show. And also, it's just kind of like, but going back to what we're talking about, being on that conveyor belt, it's just kind of like, yeah, those Edinburgh shows that I used to write, they were part of, A, what do people expect of me? And then somewhere in the mix is, what do I find funny? Do you know what I mean? But it's not, it didn't start with, what do I find funny? It started with, you know, I did 10 years of Edinburgh shows that no one came to see, and every single one of them was completely different from each other. You know, there'd be spoken word shows and musicals and comedy shows and seminars, and they'd just all be different from each other. And then all of a sudden you do stand up, and then it's kind of like, I know how to do this. I've got, let's say, 3 months to write an Edinburgh show. I've got a format. I'll do it. But it's, but that's, I think you can apply that to sort of life in a way where you just like go, right, we'll just keep making the same mistakes over and over again, and maybe small fixes along the way, and maybe things will improve, and maybe I've made some improvements, and maybe I've made some, you know, unimprovements. What's the opposite? But that's what life is. It's kind of like your conscious juggernaut, you know. Oh, I'm married. Oh, I've got kids. Oh, you know. And it's kind of like you're constantly, and this is, it's just a really weird time. Who knows what it'll be like on the other side.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of mad thing about it. It's kind of interesting that none of us really have any idea about how this will end. So it's almost that, and I think even with like writing things, it feels a bit kind of, who knows how people will be thinking at the end of it, you know? Yeah. You've just got to sort of deal with it quite personally, I think.
Yeah. I've got, you know, I've got a sitcom idea. Do you rewrite it to include the events of 2020, or do you just pretend it didn't happen?
Yeah.
It's, who knows? And I'm not, I, do you know what? We don't need to know. You know, the worst, no, I won't say that. But I haven't got, you know, I'm just sort of like, we don't need to know the answers at this point. It's not our responsibility. It's our responsibility to stay indoors, look out for ourselves, and look out for other people. That's our responsibility at the moment, is not to go around killing each other, right? And after that, it's not our responsibility to single-handedly fix the comedy industry and to fix the economic crisis, or to do any, you know, to do any of this. It's not our responsibility to do that, right? We just need to sort of like make sure that we do our bit, and our bit is do as little as possible, and in that window, in trying not to make things worse, it gives us a little window where we can kind of like try and make ourselves better, maybe. But I know that, will it go back to being the same? I fucking hope not, because I was killing myself. So if anything good comes out of this, maybe it's the fact that I work out a way of dealing with my mental health better.
Yeah, and I think with that kind of career, you can be like, you're treading water in the best way possible. You're treading water being successful, but you can also try and think about it like, how do I maintain this until I'm 65 or 70? Do you know what I mean? How can I keep myself employed in this kind of world for a long time, rather than thinking of it like, I know the next tour ends in 6 months or whatever. I'm all right till then. And then what?
Yeah, that's a fucking...
Like, what can you
hand to mouth
do every day that's going to be like satisfying and keep you, you know, in food and drink and whatever?
But also being in a career where you think, I don't want to be doing this when I'm 60. How can I make as much money now and get out of it as soon as possible?
Yeah.
And actually, no. I do what I do. You do what you do. They do what they do. There's only one of you. Only one person does what you do. You can't say that for everyone, but like, how do you do that for the rest of your life? to make, you know, in a way that makes you happy, without thinking about immediate gratification, immediate payoffs. I want everything now because that's what everyone else seems to have.
Yeah.
And you just need to, I used to have a phrase that I used to use when I was talking to younger comedians that I somehow forgot. And it was, don't spend all of your time looking over your garden fence at everyone else's gardens. If you do that, your own lawn overgrows. And it's just kind of like, you just want to spend time on your own garden.
Yeah.
Not worry about what everyone else is doing with their garden. And then, you know, you look after your lawn and don't focus on what everyone else is doing. And I think it's just a happier life. And so that's what, but that's still not my epiphany. I can't remember. It was in three parts, and one of the parts is not broadcastable because it makes me sound like an egomaniac. But there was one part which is broadcastable, which you go, oh yeah, that's kind of like a universe. I'm only saying this stuff because I think there's some sort of universal truth in it that other people can kind of like gain something from, maybe. You know, I've always tried to write things that are specifically about me, because I think the more specific you are, the more people can relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you try and please everyone, then no one leaves happy, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas if you try and write about a specific instance and a specific breakup, the amount of people that tell me that they relate to songs that I wrote or poems that I wrote that was so personal and specifically about me, you know.
I think one of the
it's a universal thing.
I was going to say, I think one of the maddest things in comedy is that idea that I always think that I am my own biggest fan, which is tragic. But I think when I'm writing stuff, I always think, would I find this funny? And that's what I need to. And I don't try and think about other people so much as, like, if someone else said this, would I find it funny?
Yeah.
And that's who you're kind of writing for. You're your own best audience.
But I also don't think that's true, now. I think that you have many, many large fans within the industry.
Oh, no, but, like, I mean, it's trying to be funny.
I know what you're saying. If I was to say I am my own biggest fan, I don't think there's a single person in the world that would doubt that. Right. But I think that if when you say it, it's not true. People look forward to seeing you on stage.
That's good. I think I look forward to it less than them.
Yeah, of course you do. But of course you fucking do. You know, but I think that's universal. Or maybe it's not. I whenever I hear a performer go on about, oh, I can't wait to get on stage, I just think, fuck off. Because there's always sort of like, I've got my walk-on music or my warm-up music playing, and everyone's sort of like taking selfies and they're like posting them online saying, oh, we're here to see the camera. And I'm backstage going, I would literally do anything not to be here right now. But I, you know, I do anything not to be at a comedy gig, whether I'm in it or not. You know, it's the last thing I fucking want. But yeah, anyway, we should probably play a song and then do some fan mail. We haven't talked about anything,
no,
of any substance.
But we're back now. We can do it anytime.
We got one a week. We'll do some. We'll play a song and then we'll come back. So hit that wheel, Natalie. Play the song.
I get up and I cannot escape.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
And yep. We're back. This is Fan Mail. I'm just finishing up. This is Fan Mail. Welcome to Fan Mail. I'm just finishing off a message. Nat.
Oh, right. Okay. Shall I start the Fan Mail?
No. Just say something.
I was going to say, I hope everyone is staying indoors. I know we've been talking a lot about staying indoors and staying happy and things. But I do remember that lots of people, of course, do have to go out. And I appreciate people that do need to do things and have essential jobs and things.
I just wanted, do you know what I was going to say? I was talking to a friend and she was saying that one of her friends is one of the cleaners at Sainsbury's. And they have to, go in and clean Sainsbury's at like 11 o'clock at night every night. And it's a shit job. And her friend was saying that they don't get treated that well by like even the other staff. And it's kind of like, thanks very much. This is, for people that work in the supermarkets and people that are collecting all of our rubbish, and there's more of it at the moment, I imagine. Just thanks to everyone that's sort of like keeping the world going while we're all inside. Because
sometimes you go having when you're saying, "Oh, I've got to stay in and all this," and I'm perfectly happy with it. It just feels sometimes you go, I guess some people don't have that option as well. So there's some ways that you kind of go, and I'm very lucky to be in that position.
Maybe as a bin man, you haven't noticed that much difference because the streets are so empty. But they normally are at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? But I would imagine for everyone else, that Charlton Heston kind of novelty of being the last man on earth has worn off now. It's like, yeah, we still got to do the job though, haven't we? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
It was Easter.
It was Easter.
I went to the shop to get some essential food yesterday, and on my way back I found a tiny little Easter egg, like tiny, that had been put in the in the door jamb of my door in my flat. And then I looked up and down all the halls, and some little Easter bunny had gone around and delivered a little mini chocolate Easter egg to all of the doors down my corridor.
Was it wrapped, or was it just like a mini egg?
It was wrapped, and it was very sweet. But I put it straight in the bin, obviously, because I'm not. I don't know where their hands have been, but it was a nice thought. I saw as a really nasty Easter surprise on Bank Holiday Monday that they showed Crystal Skull. So I was just thinking, oh, this is great. This is one way to make everyone watch it. Actually, it's not. It was on BBC. I was thinking...
Because they showed them all, right? They showed them all over the weekend.
Did they? Did they plan on doing that?
I've no idea.
Or was this a special COVID treat?
I don't know. I guess it was Easter, wasn't it? They'd probably show up. Indiana Jones is quite a good Easter fair.
I remember the bank holiday or the last day of the Christmas holidays one year. They showed Last Crusade. That was sort of good news, bad news, because you watched it, but you also knew it's the end of, this is the last Christmas movie. And then we're back to school. Thank fuck we don't have to go to school anymore. there's every so often that thought will occur to me, just like, hey, Nick, you no matter what, you never have to go to school again. And it's just like, thank fuck for that. Every day is a school day. But
there are dreams that I haven't finished something, though. That someone's like, you haven't done, did that coursework or something. They go, do I? Oh, God, I've got to go in and do it. Got to hand it in.
Oh, God. No.
Ever have dreams like that?
No, my dreams are awful. I have real, real awful nightmare, night terrors. But no, I don't have anything as bad as having to go back to school. That would be the worst.
I was thinking, on EastEnders, going back to EastEnders, and they've stopped production, haven't they? And but they still seem to be showing them. And normally, if something big happens in the world, you have, like, they'll film a bit of EastEnders where it will be one of the characters going, oh, God, have you heard about Nelson Mandela dying? And they film a little scene where they sort of acknowledge something big in the news. But now it's like EastEnders exists in a parallel present.
Yeah.
And you're watching it and it's like, this is meant to be happening now, but everyone's just out. There's no corona in Albert Square. So I feel like they've done this thing where they've tried to mirror what's happening in the real world all the time by saying, it's Easter, we have Christmas at the same time. If there's a big world event, it acknowledges it, except this doesn't.
Did they acknowledge September 11th in EastEnders?
I think so.
A cut scene with Pat going, oh, bloody hell, do you hear about 9/11?
I bet they did.
And then they moved on.
And someone else says, yeah, I did. But they do have these little scenes they just to acknowledge something.
It's really short-sighted. They could have easily failed for this. They could have just literally set up a bunch of cameras in Albert Square and occasionally seen someone crossing the streets, going to the shop and then coming back again. And that's, they could have done that for 4 months. And then they could have just put the TV back.
They should. I think that's exactly.
Could have just put the series back to what it was.
They should pause it now while they're not filming, and when it starts up again, they start showing them again. And in the meantime, they do like an isolation one that's all filmed over Zoom, with them talking to each other about it, and then you just pick it right up from where you left off. Because now I feel like the EastEnders is like sci-fi now because it's not in the same world as us. It's like It's alternative present.
It's what do they call it in? It's a multiverse.
Yeah, what's Back to the Future 2 when that happens? When they go back
an alternative timeline. What?
Yeah, it's like that alternative timeline.
It sort of is. Sort of is, and it isn't.
It is.
I remember what that other thing was. The other thing was, I'm not thinking about comedy at the moment, particularly.
So, it's a shame for anyone listening.
Say again?
It's a shame for anyone listening.
Fuck them. Where's their podcast? So, but if I'm not thinking about comedy at the moment, yeah? So what I'm doing is I'm sort of like doing DIY and I'm cooking and I'm talking to my family and I am talking to my friends. I'm getting on and doing stuff that's not comedy related. And I'm realizing that within myself, I am happy. And then as soon as I go on Twitter and I go back to that, looking at what other people are doing and feeling like I should be doing a video and I should be doing like a music video in my living room and I should be, you know, posting my wake-up routine and get, you know, as soon as I think about all of that, I suddenly start panicking and comparing myself to other people and going, oh, God, why is that? But when I just focus on not comedy, but me and my skills, look at my skills and I look at what I can do. There's a whole list of stuff that I am either good at or I'm proficient at and, you know, and I'm happy with that. And then as soon as you go into this thing, which is a competitive industry where you're comparing yourself to other people, and then you go, actually, I feel shit about myself and I feel like I'm not enough and I'm not doing enough. But when you just focus on yourself, you realise that you're enough. You know? And I think that's something that I've learned, where it's kind of like I will see comedy as a thing that I participate in, or I am seeing as comedy as something that I participate in, but it's not who I am.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm drawing a line between that.
But I think as well, like,
I'm keeping something for myself.
I think it feels that way, but I don't think comedy is a competition. I think it's like you're saying, I think you're the only person that can do what you do. So you're unique in that. Everyone's got their own unique thing.
Yeah, but I think I said that off air.
Okay. But I think you do. Like, you do that. But I think you do have something which is like, you're not like everyone else.
I'm not so like anyone else.
You're in competition with yourself. You're not in competition with anyone else.
No, but that's the thing that I always thought, that's the thing I've always said about what I do and comedy. It's just sort of like, I mean, I don't feel competitive in that respect. I feel like, you know, only I do what I do. But then on the other level, you can feel like, it's your income. And you would like to do a job that has a payday so that you can keep living and do, and plan a future for yourself, whether that be a family or a holiday or something. You know, as a I suppose as a comedian, you don't ever really allow yourself any time off, you know, because you always feel like, well, where's the next job coming from? But maybe this is, you know, I did take some time off, but I took some time off to do writing and stuff. And this is actually just sort of like an externally, what do you call it? An externally mandated kind of gardening leave, except we're not allowed in the garden. Or, if you've got a garden, I'm sure you're allowed in your garden. I've got communal gardens. They're very...
We're probably not allowed in your gardens.
No, but I mean, why not? 2 metres away. come and visit me in one of my communal gardens.
Just stand in people's gardens, staring into their window 2 metres distance.
They're communal gardens. What, other people's gardens?
Yeah. Just stand there and watch them.
Every day's a bank holiday at the moment, surely. It's barbecues left, right and centre. It's amazing how I go outside.
On every day, rather than a documentary about a concentration camp at a time when you go, not now. Not now, guys.
That's weird, isn't it? Because I've got a box set, so I can just watch a concentration camp documentary whenever I want. So it's nice to watch a bit of Indiana Jones. Oh God, it's not that bad, is it, Crystal Skull?
I don't mind it.
It's shit, actually. Now I think about it, it's shit.
No, I don't. What's
your favourite Indiana Jones?
Crystal Skull. Last Crusade, I think.
I think it is Last Crusade, but I find... Somebody asked me in the week on Twitter, and you only have, like, a certain amount of... I refuse to just sort of, like, justify myself that much on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
But you only have a certain amount of characters to sort of discuss it. What is your favourite? It's definitely not... It might have been Temple of Doom, but I think Kate Capshaw ruins it. And obviously that's Spielberg telling her to do that. I don't think necessarily the character... I mean, I'm sure that there is a performance of that character. I don't really blame Kate Capshaw for that. And everyone says, oh, well, George was going through a dark period where he was going through a divorce and that's why it's so much darker. It's like, the dark elements aren't the things that upset me about that film. The dark stuff is great, I think. But their way of counterbalancing the dark stuff with the light stuff, and the light stuff is Willie Scott just screaming for the entire film. And you're just like, she's just got to be one of the most irritating characters to ever turn up in a franchise. I think she's worse than Jar Jar Binks. Because it's like, at least Jar Jar Binks was meant to appeal to children. I don't know who Kate Capshaw is meant to appeal to anyone, like male, female, young, old. Who is that appealing to? It's just one of the most irritating performances in any series of films, in any film almost. I think it's unwatchable. So I think she sinks.
I've seen Last Crusade at the cinema, and I think that's why. So I would have seen it when I was 9 or something.
1989, was that?
Yeah, I think so. So I probably would have been 10.
So same year as Back to the Future 2 and Batman, and what was the other film I was going to say? Same year as Indiana Jones.
The Abyss.
No, wasn't that 90? The Abyss.
I think it's 89. Maybe he's 90. Now maybe he's 90.
When was Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Was that 89?
I think that's 88.
Die Hard was 88. I mean, this is...
Indiana
Jones and the Last Crusade, obviously. Indiana Jones 3 was the same year as Police Academy 6. So I distinctly remember in the dining hall, there were kids that were coming in having seen... I never saw it. I wasn't really into Indiana Jones at that point. I think Star Wars probably got me into Indiana Jones. Or LucasArts, you know, Monkey Island. And then once you finished Monkey Island, there was sort of like a similar Indiana Jones game. But people were either talking about Last Crusade or they were talking about Police Academy 6. Those are the big ones. Two franchises that I had not really got into.
Very big thing in my school.
Indiana Jones was too scary for me. I remember the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark and it gave me nightmares. I remember the bats flying in Temple of Doom. That was on TV when I was in London. And that was terrifying. And then Last Crusade, I was a gap. There was just a gap where I didn't see. I probably didn't see it until that Christmas that I just mentioned, at the end of the Christmas holiday. It's good though, isn't it?
It's a great film. I think that's why. I think it has the most sort of fun memories of me seeing it at the cinema. And it was the only one I would have seen at the cinema, I think. I think I might have seen, maybe I saw Temple of Doom later.
You'd have been 10.
Yeah, so I think, I'm sure that was the first time I saw it at the cinema.
You were just the right age, maybe.
Yeah.
And it but just, maybe it would have been, no, because there's nothing too grim in that, is there? There's the rats.
Yeah, and that was horrible, but I loved it.
It's weird, isn't it, though? They've done insects and they've done snakes. So in the first one, they do snakes. In the second one, they do insects. Third one, they do rats. So the fourth one should be spiders, right? But it's not, it's ants. You know, nobody's got a fear of ants. What are you doing? Should have definitely been spiders. But I think people's reactions to spiders are so intense.
Yes.
That unless it's a specific film that is like Arachnophobia, where we're going to deal with spiders here, guys. You got to know that going in. Even something like Spider-Man, I was genuinely nervous about going into Spider-Man because I knew he gets bitten by a spider. It's just like, how much spider action is going to be in there? And then it's just like, right, I'm terrified.
So, really?
Yeah, like, I can't function. And so in Spider-Man, when you see this little spider, they found, like, the least offensive... Just keep it still. Right, okay. Are you going to include this in the video section so that people know what... Even during COVID,
you can type it in.
Type it into the thing. What were we saying now?
Spiders, Spider-Man.
So even the spider that they use in Spider-Man is like the least offensive spider that they could have picked. You know, no one's getting scared about that. But so I think that if you put spiders in an Indiana Jones film, it'd be like, oh god, there'd be like people walking out or passing out or just not coming through the film.
That reminds me, though, that we should do some fan mail in a minute, but I remember seeing Arachnophobia at the cinema, and that was terrifying. Such a like, for a film that I think was a PG, right?
Yeah.
It terrified me. I couldn't believe how, like, I was jumping all over the place and, like, barely watched most of it.
It's like Jaws, isn't it? Well, Jaws, I think, really should be, shouldn't be a PG. I think it's a 12 now, right?
Yeah.
Terminator's a 15. What else is a 15? I was watching something that's a 15 now.
Police Academy 1.
No, that's always been a 15, mate. There's tits in it.
Gremlins is a 15, isn't it? Rather than a...
But that's probably a 12 now, isn't it?
Maybe it is now.
I think Gremlins was always a 15. I watched something that was a 15. Terminator's a 15 now, but there was something else that's a 15. American Werewolf in London's a 15 now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I think is probably a bit wrong. It's the little flap of skin he's got in his neck when Griffin Dunn comes back as the undead, and when he talks, he's got this little flap of skin that sort of jiggles around, and it's the most disgusting thing you've ever seen. It's only in that one scene when he's eating toast, but fucking hell, it's just it. Everything else could be like a solid mold. That is definitely like fleshy.
I should point out as well that I don't know what the thing Natalie was trying to tell us was.
Oh, so it was
I don't know.
Oh, it was that we should do fan mail in a minute.
Okay.
She also said we should talk about what we've been a fan of this week, and that's exactly what we're doing. So it's almost impossible to keep her happy. but what I was gonna say about Temple of Doom is I think the comedy in Raiders of the Lost Ark and everything about that film is seamless. And I think Sean Connery in Last Crusade is just, he's incredible. Like that relationship. Someone was pointing out that, I watched a YouTube thing and someone was basically saying that it wasn't until Highlander and The Untouchables, and maybe it was The Untouchables, that basically Sean Connery started getting used now as like the elder statesperson. Up until then, he was the lead. And then they used him as kind of like an Obi-Wan Kenobi figure, where he would be like the older guy, like teaching the new guy. And then basically what you got with Last Crusade is like the epitome of that. You've got like James Bond kind of coming in and being Indiana Jones's dad. And I think that that's really cool. But I find the comedy and some of the set pieces like fairly heavy-handed in Last Crusade, in a way that's sort of like really signposted.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was more. Maybe it is slightly more kiddie friendly then. I don't know. I remember it appealed to me.
There's the bit in the library when he's stamping the books, and he's also using the metal pole to smash through the floor on X marks the spot. And every time he stamps down in the book with the rubber stamp, Indy times it with smashing in the floor.
Yeah.
That's funny, but it's played to like French farce. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, whoa, it's like comedy rather than sort of what's the word,
comedy, like sort of incidental comedy, or...
incidental is the word, yeah, incidental comedy. It's sort of like comedy. And there was also that set piece at the end where he's hanging off the tank with a strap on his side satchel.
Yes.
And he's like going, oh no, I'm stuck on the gun turret, and he's trying to pull it up, and then he climbs up and then he's released from it, and it's kind of like, well, there's no way for the strap to have got caught round the turret. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, because he's against the wall. So he's hanging off this strap, but the strap is around the gun turret. But when he climbs back up again, it was like it was just resting on top of it. Do you know what I mean?
Where they're all peering off the side of the cliff, and then he appears next to them and also starts peering over when they think he's died, or they think he's gone over on the tank.
Yeah,
find that a really funny joke.
That's brilliant. That's great. Yeah, but Harrison Ford is an amazing comedian.
Yeah,
like you can watch, well, not a lot of his performances, but certainly Indiana Jones, and he's got like Cary Grant lightness of touch to what he does. He's brilliant and all that. And I'm not saying I don't enjoy the comedy in Last Crusade. But what I'm saying is it's a lot more on the nose than it was in the other parts of the franchise. It's also not really helped by like John Williams underscoring every single gag, you know, but I think Last Crusade is as good as a perfect film as you're going to get. Yeah. It's kind of what you would imagine a James Bond film to be like. And then when you watch a James Bond film, you realize it's a lot of boring scuba diving sequences, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's do some fan mail.
Yes.
Right, we're playing the music, right?
Okay.
So, we're doing our fan mail. Missed you guys, Rachel.
That's nice.
I can't hear myself, so I'm going to do an approximation of my fan mail. Nick and Nat, in your humble opinion, what is the best straight-to-DVD film to watch during isolation? From Chatty Cathy.
Why would you make that your definition?
What is the best DVD film to watch during isolation? Just watch anything you fucking want, Chatty Cathy. you're called Chatty Cathy. Maybe you should watch the Child's Play remake. That looks awful. Where do I begin? These past few weeks I've felt lost, capital lost, without my favourite duo entertaining me every Friday. It just shows how important radio is at a time like this. I'm so glad you're back doing shows, and I can't wait to hear some great old five-star fun, Dexter.
Is that the murderer, Dexter, do you think?
I fucking hope so. He must be fucking going mental at the moment. Not being allowed out. He must just have to be kind of like constantly ordering deliveroos and then
killing the guys when they turn up.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the ultimate Spider-Man. Like it would be like a web that he's... I mean, I'm sure people do that, so it's probably not something to... Probably not something to make light of in these dark, dark times. I had a very dark time the other night, Matt. But I changed the bulb and then it got a lot better. Anyway, hi Nick and Nat. So pleased to have you back with us. Hope you're both well and finding ways. Oh, I missed one, did I? I miss the cunty sounds of your voices. Love a fellow cunt, Mr. McCunt Esquire. Hi, Nick and Nat. So pleased. Can you see these, by the way, Nat?
Yeah.
Hi, Nick and Nat. So pleased to have you back with us. Hope you're both well and finding ways to stay safe. Whether that's reading 3D comics or coming up with economical ways of disposing of cup. I do have a question, actually. A reason of you managing to stay creative? If so, how? I have so many scripts I could be working on, but I haven't managed a word. Have either of you considered mentoring? I guess that's two questions. Enjoy recording the show, guys. I look forward to hearing it all. Oh, hello, Holly. Hello, Holly. I think we've answered all of that in the first hour.
We sort of done it in the first half, yeah.
Yeah, but I wouldn't put too much pressure on yourself. If it comes, it comes, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. And I wouldn't spend your whole time beating yourself up about it. Unless you use creativity as a way of escape and your own entertainment. And if that's the case, then maybe you should just think about what it is that you want to write about rather than... think about what it is that you want to write about rather than, you know, thinking about what it is that you feel like you should be writing. Maybe that's the thing. People ask me mentoring advice quite a lot, and I always find that quite bewildering because it's like I can't get my own stuff made. So I don't know what I could possibly, you know, offer anyone else. But I would just say write for yourself if you need it as a means of escape at the moment. If you don't, and don't worry about it too much.
I always feel terribly lazy at this time as well, which is a silly way to think about it. But I think one of the things I find easier than most about isolation is that I find the days go quite quickly. I find that I've always got things to do and keep myself busy.
Read a book.
Yeah.
I tell you who's great, Shirley Jackson. Read Shirley Jackson. She's incredible. All right. OMFG, thank the sweet juicy Lord that you are back. I watch a lot of films and other garbage during this period that my favourite genre is a touch of softcore porn. It's really helping me through the endless days and steamy nights. I particularly enjoy 9.5 weeks and watch it at least once a day. Do you have any recommendations for me? I also like Howard's Way and other merchandise retirement gin. Big John C. So Howard's Way and 9.5 weeks. Once a day, I watch 9.5 weeks. Have you watched the sequel, Another 9.5 Weeks?
Never seen it.
I tell you what I keep getting advertised, and by that I mean I keep starting the same film over and over again, but not getting very far. I can't remember what the film is. Or maybe it was Eskimo Now. I finally got through Eskimo Now. Speaking of softcore porn, that's an entertaining film. I thought that was great. It was like Carry On.
Yeah.
With the word cunt speckled to it. There was the word cunt. Oh, he says cunt in American Werewolf in London. When he's in Trafalgar Square. He says, the Queen is a man! Fuck! Shit! Cunt! And it's like, I've never heard it until this recent time that I watched American Werewolf in London. I was just like, fucking hell, he says cunt. That's amazing. It shocked me. But, have we ever... you're not holding this... we're doing the fan mail. Lift it up. I cannot see a piece of. Shall I go? Yes, we'll do that in 2 seconds. Right now. What were we saying?
American Werewolf in London.
What else were we saying? Oh yeah, the Two Moon Junction. Have you ever seen that?
I've never seen it.
That looks incredible. Sherilyne Fenn and the bad guy from Kindergarten Cop.
Okay, yes, I vaguely remember it.
It's sort of, is it Sherilyne Fenn? I think it is. Two Moon Junction. That looks quite good. I've got 9.5 weeks. I meant to rewatch it. I've got it on DVD, so I might give it a watch and let you know.
Really like Mickey Rourke, especially as like a leading man. I think he's so cool in those 80s movies.
Weird, isn't it? That career. What a weird career.
Yeah, you'd never think it now, but like as a proper leading man, I think he's great.
My favourite Mickey Rourke role is obviously that of Tool from The Expendables. my favourite bit of Expendables is the bit when they all turn up to Tool's garage and they're all standing there under a massive sign that says Tools. And you think, was that deliberate? Was that deliberate? Hey guys, hope you're well and that you're doing a 5-star show today. I hope you're being treated well by that bird that comes into the studio to bring you the tea, and she's made a nice meal here today. My respects and greetings and salutations to you all. Cheers, Tchaikovsky. Natalie's doing fine. Fucking hell, people really are going mental in lockdown, aren't they? Hi, Nick and Nat. So glad you're back. Just wondering about your thoughts on Buffy. My boyfriend is obsessed with it. We're currently watching it for the second time. I love the characters and their development with interest and complicated villains. Do you have any favourites? Cheers, Lewis.
I certainly watched Buffy years ago. It's not something I've ever revisited.
I had a girlfriend that used to be obsessed with Buffy, and we split up and it was just like, can't really watch it. Did the A musical Buffy sing along the other week?
Yeah.
Actually, that was the last thing I did before we went into, before I got ill. Josh Whedon was there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which was sort of interesting. Josh Whedon was there, so I met Josh Whedon. That was, but I never seen Buffy. But
I met him. I met him. He used to come into the comic shop he used to work in a lot. And he was very nice. And it was just after the second Avengers film came out. And I always got the impression he was very, like, he wanted to know what people thought about it.
He didn't like,
I think he thought it was rubbish. And it was almost like he was always trying to get the pulse of what people were thinking.
Yeah, because they probably wouldn't tell him to his face.
Yeah. And actually, what happened was, we were all probably a bit too polite.
Yeah, well, I didn't particularly... I mean, I remember leaving the first one and having, like, an actual migraine. But, you know, you're not allowed to say anything critical about the Marvel film. So, yeah, they're all good. they're all of a standard, if you like that sort of thing. You have to if you want a career in the film industry now. That's how you do things. I was watching Taika Waititi just getting very enthusiastic about Marvel. He did like a watch along with Thor Ragnarok. And you just think, yeah, but I'm sure he hasn't chosen to do that. Yeah. He is basically promoting the fourth Thor film that's coming out.
Yeah.
So Marvel have said, can you do a watch along? And Taika Waititi is all of a sudden like the biggest Marvel fan, really excited about Marvel. And you go, but everyone has to be excited about Marvel because they're the people that are making all the biggest films. You know, Kenneth Branagh did his whole, I grew up watching Thor when I was living in Ireland. I read all the Thor comics and you go, did you fuck? All of a sudden, you've got all of these middle-aged people that are coming out saying, yeah, I've always loved Marvel. Give us a film. You can come on. You know, I have got more respect for Jake Gyllenhaal, who sat there and he doesn't pretend to know anything about any of the Marvel films, any of the
universe. I find that quite like quite refreshing. And also, we were like all that thing. You know, I mean, it's an old thing now, but going back to all that Scorsese thing about the Marvel movies, you go, well, what's Scorsese now? Like 70? Like he'd just be like, he's not even the right generation for it.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole different conversation. Let's get Bill out on.
Yeah.
How do we do this? Do you just like
press on?
Do we just, should we play a song and then we do it? Or should we just... he's just here. Hello! We're joined in the studio, in the studio being my spare bedroom, Nathaniel's laundry room, Natalie's living room, and we're joined in the studio now by Bill Al-Zafar. Where are you? You
look like you're
underneath your stairs.
It's a loft room.
Loft room.
Yeah, so it's weird.
A loft-shaped door.
Yeah, you know.
No, tell me more.
Oh, that's kind of it, really.
No, you're here now. You've got to do all the filling.
Oh, right, okay.
Can you see us?
Yeah, I can see you, yeah.
Which is quite nice. It's like Brady Bunch.
Yep.
How many times have people been saying that in lockdown?
It's like
Brady Bunch.
You can hit your head in a loft room because.
How high is the ceiling from you now? Are you on a slope?
Not that high. The slope is on the other side, but the ceiling isn't very high. It's a very disappointing loft conversion.
Stand up. Let's see you stand up.
So, what can you see?
I can see that light.
Yeah, I mean, look, I can touch the ceiling too easily. Do you know what I mean?
You know what? I can touch my ceiling, but that's because...
But you're very tall. You're nearly not. 7 foot.
I am nearly 7 foot. I'm six foot. But I tell you why. It's because I think the ceilings in my flat are 5 meters. And then what they've done is that in half of my flat, I've got a 5 meter tall room.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the other half of my flat, they've literally just split it. So all of the ceilings are 2.5 meters.
Is someone living in between?
What do you mean living in between?
You've got like another, they've sold it as another flat to someone tiny.
No, you're misunderstanding, which is weird. You've actually been to my flat, Nathaniel. I'm saying that there's 5 meters over there, which is useless because it's dead space. I'm not like storing books in the sky. Do you understand?
That space.
What?
What's in that space?
The air. It's above my head. There's like, I'm only 6 foot tall, so for the rest of the space above me, it's dead space, isn't it?
You're right.
No, you can't do yoga. You can't do yoga with a low ceiling.
Yeah.
You can't do...
It's very disappointing.
You can't do yoga with low self-esteem.
Yeah.
When you stay somewhere in Edinburgh, they've got those houses, haven't they, that have got massive high ceilings.
Oh, yeah.
And you always think, if it was London, they would put another floor in.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what they've done here. Can I show you?
Yeah.
Look. So they have put a floor in.
And it's low.
Yeah.
So it's just here. It's literally, I would say it's a foot. Hang on. I'm going to take my headphones off and I'll show you.
Yeah, we can see Nick touching his own ceiling. Without
my head.
Didn't look like it was any great effort to.
Arm wasn't even straight.
No. Mm.
No.
straight on the ceiling. Anyway, hello, Bilal.
Yeah.
How are you finding lockdown?
Difficult, but I'm trying to do some routine stuff. I'm going to go for a run after this. Which, yeah. I'm not very good. Do you ever, you know, when you feel like you should be better at something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, because I'm skinny, I just thought I could run for ages, but I can do like 10 minutes and then I'm finished.
Yeah, I've got that problem.
People talk about running like it's easy. Running's so hard. When people talk about like, oh, you could definitely do a 5K.
No.
I'm like, no.
No, it's boring as well. It's very boring.
Yeah, it is boring. It is boring. And it's just like, I just think about it. I'm so aware of doing it. I'm doing it almost going, I'm running. Running.
Yeah.
And then I just get bored and stop. And I think a lot of it is that, do you know when people run marathons and they say there's that bit where they hit the wall at like mile 20? I reckon I get that within about 4 minutes.
Yeah, me too.
Just my mental thing just starts going, is it just this?
Mm.
Are we still doing this? Can we stop now?
Do you ever do the plank?
I've done it before.
When you do the plank?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's you're strengthening your core muscles, right? And so basically you're rigid and you're just leaning on your elbows or you're leaning on your hands like that. Mm-hmm. That's boring. That is so fucking boring. And you're doing it and you go, you get to a certain point. I mean, you get to like a minute, right? And it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
But I always give up about the minute point if I'm doing it. But it's not the pain that makes me stop. It's just how fucking boring it is. You go, I've done a minute. That's all right, isn't it? That's a decent enough time.
Yeah, I was going to get a personal trainer just to make all that stuff interesting, basically.
Doesn't make it more interesting.
Does it? No?
That's someone to talk to, isn't it?
Oh, they try and lend you their DVDs and you just think, oh, Don't want him. No, I had a lovely, I do have a lovely, but I haven't seen him in a while, personal trainer. Yeah, it does make it interesting, but it makes, do you know what? I used to have a piano teacher and when I was growing up, and he sort of like had an interest in computer games. And I worked out that if I just kept him talking about computer games, I wouldn't have to actually do any piano work. And it's got to the point now where I'm nearly 40 and I can't play piano. And I regret that. And I don't play Mega Drive anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, who's the real winner? He is, because he got paid for doing fuck all. So I think if you have
he
a personal trainer...
He
didn't care. But if you have a personal trainer, the temptation is to keep him talking about shit for as long as possible at the beginning.
Mm.
So that, you know... Yeah,
that would be my tactic.
You eat your hour up. But you do running, don't you, Nat?
That's what I mean. I try and do it, but I'm so terrible at it. Like, I just get bored, and I can do 10 minutes, and then I sort of do it and stop, and then go, that's annoying, and then I can start off again. I couldn't do more than, I think once I did it for about half an hour, and that's basically as good as I could do it.
Because you just realise you can stop whenever you want.
Yeah.
And then you stop.
Because it's like, is this enjoying yourself? Not really. Stop then.
No.
Also, yeah. I think a lot of runners say they get that kind of rush of adrenaline.
Yeah, no.
Do you not get that? And I go, nope. Do you get that doing stand-up?
Yeah.
I don't know if I get that even.
Really?
Yeah. I think I just kind of... I have ones where I go, that was good. And that's almost like... I go, yeah, I enjoyed that. I don't think
I feel like having a fight after a good gig.
Do you get the adrenaline rush, Nick?
Yeah. No, I feel like every single time I've dodged a bullet. So
relief.
I feel relief when I've done a gig.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know if I probably get the adrenaline rush when I'm on stage.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? But then my shows are 2 hours.
Oh, bloody hell.
So you're not going to get... Imagine not feeling any sense of reward for 2 hours and then having a little rush.
Have you heard about when American comedians bump each other?
Bump.
Have you heard of this? Bump. Which is, because you said you did 2 hours. Because I didn't know about this until I started listening to loads of American podcasts.
Well, I have an interval. 2:45 minutes.
Yeah. No, that's fine. But what they do in America is someone will go on. So you're meant to headline and I'm before you. I just do an hour instead of 20 minutes or even 2 hours and then you go home and that's me bumping you. And that's a thing that happens a lot in America.
What bad,
isn't it?
Sort of talks over the headliner.
Yeah.
The headliner has to go home.
So it's a bit different though as well, because like the headliner could be, it's not quite like here, the headliner could be a newer person about to get their big break kind of thing by headlining the Comedy Store in America or whatever. And then someone like Carlos Mencia used to do it a lot. I don't know if you know that guy. And he'd just go on and do 2 hours of like his best stuff. And then the little headliner would go home. Sad, isn't it? It's mad.
It's
sad.
Yeah. That's not like when the compere says, do you mind closing?
Yeah, no, it's different.
That's literally someone without any permission just goes on and goes, I'm gonna do more.
They can because they're more famous or whatever.
Yeah. But Carlos Mencia has got into a lot of trouble, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's a fascinating guy.
I guess you have it sometimes when you get someone who might be quite famous on the bill who can sort of, who was meant a headline and then goes, actually, can I open? Because they just want to go home.
Yeah, that's tough as well. Like when you're previewing with someone and they're way more famous.
Yes.
And then all their fans leave.
I think it's a bit inconsiderate as well. You get people that have just had kids or something and they say, can I go on early? Because I've got a family to get back to. And you go, do you know what? Do you mind if I go on early? Because I've just got an empty flat to get over to. And I find it really depressing when there's nothing on telly.
Yeah.
How about that? You know, you've got people that love you waiting for you. I've got nothing. So I think that's a good way of bartering.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a web series, haven't you?
Yes.
Bilal Zafar's School of Excellence.
Acting School of Excellence.
Acting School of... Oh, yeah, sorry, I've missed
it's
that.
It's okay. Bit.
Acting School of Excellence.
Yeah, so I've been really lucky because I really wanted to make this thing. I couldn't find anyone that would do it with me. And then I met Ben Malaby. Do you know him?
I know Ben Malaby, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He makes it with me. He's a BAFTA-nominated guy and just an amazing comedy person. He wanted to do it with me. And so we make this little web series. Luckily, we filmed 5 before this lockdown thing happened. So I've got a thing to think about at the moment, you know. And it's just like, it's kind of like a spoof chat show thing about acting. And then eventually we do some scenes from a classic film. It's very stupid, like very silly little 10-minute.
Are you doing the actual scene?
Yeah.
Straight?
You've got 3 out. What days do they come out?
Monday. Monday at about 11 a.m.
So you've got 3 out at the moment, or 4?
3 so far.
I've seen the first 2 with Josie Long and Nick Sampson.
The Ian Lee one is nuts.
Yeah, right. Okay.
They're getting more. I think they got better as we did them, because I just got more confident with it, because I've never really done this sort of thing. And they get more silly and sort of where I wanted it to be, if you know what I mean.
But when you start something, you kind of use sort of like, these are the core ideas. Mm-hmm. And then you sort of, you've done that. And then you have the freedom to move away from what it is. And then it sort of like finds itself in a way, doesn't it?
Mm. And you can be really stupid with it and just have fun.
Yeah, really funny.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, you should be. It's fucking funny. It's lovely.
But now you get to just release those 5 and say that's series 1.
Yes, and exactly. And I might be doing more on Zoom because we do want to release more and there's people I want to do it with and stuff. Ewan McIntosh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy? He asked if he can do it.
Oh, yeah.
I said, okay. So we might do one on Zoom.
You're very enthusiastic. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, so I'll do some more. And, we've got... are you guys doing much online content?
Doing this.
Apart from this?
Other than this, it's whatever I get asked to do, really.
Mm.
I'll say yes to things, but I'm not very proactive about getting stuff going.
Well, I kind of had an epiphany, a realization yesterday that live comedy will probably not be back for a while.
Yeah.
And it's all I do for money, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Like, it's my only thing. So I think I'm going to really focus on online and get into Twitch and stuff like that. Got this decent webcam.
I like the way you say that, almost like you're going, I might do Twitch.
Sounds I'm like definitely doing it. No, I'm going to do it. I'm just not that confident. But I thought about it, and I thought I have to treat it like stand-up, where it's like I wasn't confident, and you just have to
work it out. Yeah, you've just got to, it is our job. But was I saying this to you? No, I did another podcast in a week. But, yeah, it's like we've just got to find new ways of doing... this isn't what I was going to say. I've just forgotten what I was going to say and I'm going to win it.
I was going to say.
I remembered when I said it. Okay. Listen to, I tell you what, I cover it all expertly in Psy Comedy with Nathan Cassidy. It's only 20 minutes. You can listen to it in like a tea break sitting over there.
Mm. You could play it at double speed.
Yeah, play it. I've just learned type speed and a half or whatever. You can just fucking. I listen to all of these fucking YouTube. I watch all these YouTube videos that are like 45 minutes, and if you just click 1.5, and it gets to it in like half an hour, and you go, oh my god! It's like I always thought
in real life, and go, you talk a lot slower in real life.
I always just think, the travelators at airports. Mm-hmm. You have people that stand on them. And you go, what are you doing? I always think that if you walk along enough of them, you can actually undo like one of the Michael Bay Transformers movies. you get your life back. If you walk along them.
Put them at 1.5 speed as well.
I've seen 3 of those, man.
I think I've seen the first 2.
I heard that the 5... Is there 4 or 5?
I think it's 5.
Is the 5th one the really stupid? I mean, I know they're all stupid, but is the 5th one...
King Arthur?
Yeah.
That's the one I want to see.
Yeah.
Because I've been told, and I want to see this myself, that in that you find out that lots of people throughout history, like Transformers, and one of them, Stephen Hawking, I think it's meant to be like part Transformer or something.
That's so offensive.
I know. I think he was alive at the time as well. Like he was, like he might have seen it. Gone. What?
Oh my god! I think there's something about. Oh, he might be.
Doesn't he have a cameo in it?
He might even have a cameo.
Oh, maybe.
I haven't seen it.
I think there's something about slavery in there and Transformers. Yeah, I mean,
the second one's racist, right?
They're all a bit. There's because there's those two characters that are like black stereotype. Yeah. That are Transformers. Yeah. And I think I read that they're voiced by a white person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's not like, from the cartoon though.
No.
I don't think so.
Okay. Not the way they're in this. And the way they're caricatured.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. All right. I mean, nothing's like it was in the cartoon.
No.
I don't understand why they're so complicated, why the robots are so complicated. You go, they fold into a car. Mm. The idea is that you're meant to be ages 4 and up.
Okay, yeah.
So, and it's just like there's so many intricate moving parts. You go, this looks nothing like the toy that I had when I was growing
up. You can't tell what's going on when they're fighting.
I mean, to sound old before my time, but it's fucking confusing films to watch. I don't like them. Honestly, not on a visual level or a storytelling level. They're confusing.
Hmm.
Have either of you two done any gigs online?
I did one. Yeah, okay. I did one, which was all right. Bit awkward.
Weird.
Yeah, but we were only doing 5-minute sets. And the one I did was run by... It's called Cosmic Shambles, which is...
Yeah, I'm doing that next week.
Oh, good. It's a decent one because it's run by Thingy. What's his face?
John Luke Roberts.
Who? No. Yes, it's his gig. But Robin Ince. It's his website, I think. Cosmic Shambles.
Yes, yes.
So you get quite a lot of viewers watching it, and that's a nicer one. And yeah, you only do 5 minutes, I think. So
I'm doing one next week, and the audience have to pay to watch it.
Okay.
And then there's a door split. Yeah.
Oh.
So you get paid, right?
Mm.
You think that's great, and then I tweeted it and they said tickets selling out fast, and you go, what do you mean? It's the internet.
Selling out.
What do you mean? Why have you put a limit? This is the one time when a venue size doesn't count. What? Got a maximum of 20 people can watch this fucking gig on the fucking internet. They could be watching it in Alaska. I'm getting a fucking door split. Fucking hell. We're selling 20 tickets at £5 each. Well, thank you fucking very much.
Right. It's not like it would be like, sometimes it works better in a smaller room. Doesn't make any sense. You're doing it.
We're all in a small room, mate. We're in the small room of our fucking limited imagination. Fucking hell. I'm going to be in a fucking small room doing a fucking thing to an audience of none on the internet. I mean, how is it? Putting a fucking limit on the amount of people that can fucking watch the fucking gig.
Are you sure there's a limit, or did they just say that?
Tickets selling out first, and you go, why have you done that?
I reckon that's just so when you get your door split, you'll go, oh, I'm pleased with that amount, rather than, there's probably millions of people watching it. Someone's making loads of money off that, Nick.
It's possible to, but you, I mean, you could make £1 million off of that if you did a door split. It's £5 each, right? It's £5 each. 5 acts and 1 million people watch it. That's £1 million each. I mean, why aren't we all doing that? Why aren't we all doing that? Oh, I mean, it's like tickets running out fast. What, you mean almost everyone on the planet has bought a ticket so far? That's crazy.
That's great, though. Great audience. Great exposure.
God. Fucking hell.
You sold, 10 billion sold. So it's pretty good.
Okay, well, I better brush up on my Ten Commandments material. That's right. Fucking hell. Ten Commandments. Did he say, thou shall not covet thy neighbour's ass? Did he mean bottom?
Great stuff.
Well, that could take at least 2 minutes, that bit.
But there's no feedback. It doesn't matter. I can't hear whether it's dying or not.
But I could, when I did it, I could see the other comedians.
What, rolling their eyes?
Yeah.
that's the visual joke. Because we can, this is a podcast, isn't it? It's a radio thing. Yeah. So you might use that as your clip. Who knows? That's fan club. Right, yeah, so you can see the other comedians. And what was that like? Were they being...
It was all right. They were smart. It was all lovely people. It was Josie Long, John Luke Roberts, Johnny and the Baptists.
Lots of Shelf. Smiles.
Pardon?
Lots of smiles.
Yeah, very, the nicest people. Like, I'm glad I got to do it with them. I wouldn't want to do, like, a Skype gig with, like, random open spots that Man. Shared David Icke videos on my Facebook, you know. It's loads.
You talk about this. That's the other thing. It's like, what do you even write about to talk about? Are you expected to go, like, if you don't talk about it, is it weird? If you do, is that weird? Does anyone want to hear about it?
I mean, everyone approached it differently. Some people did it totally straight. I talked about it pretty much. Yeah.
Stand up down the lens. I don't even know how I'd do that.
It depends. Like, John Luke Roberts did a character, and so he just did this weird monologue, which was fine. That worked. I had to address it because my style is...
Wow. You know. He did a monologue, which was fine.
No, I mean...
Bloody hell.
Oh, God.
Right,
it was very funny.
We're critiquing each other now, are we?
It was very right. funny.
I wouldn't have done it, but he seems to get away with it for 10 minutes.
I've got a problem, right, where because my voice is quite monotone, it sounds like I'm being sarcastic a lot of the time.
No, it didn't sound like you're being sarcastic.
And I'm not. I'm being nice, but
it
people think...
It sounds like you're being hypercritical of Robert's act. But not sarcastic, no. You've got a fine voice.
Thanks.
And would you have gone to Edinburgh this year, were it to happen?
Yeah. I was going to do a paid...
You can do 5 months now, can't you? You could do a whole month of this.
Yeah. Same time.
Get up with a hangover.
You do a bucket speech.
You do a bucket speech. Yeah, but you can do that. You can go, can you put like £3 in my coffee account? You know? But you can crawl, you can do flyering in your hallway for like an hour. It's better be an hour, but you only do 5 minutes. Then you come into your venue, sit down, you do an hour on this. Then what you do is you leave, go into your kitchen and drink for 15 hours. And go to bed at 7 o'clock in the morning, crawl yourself out to do, you know, maybe a promotional gig on Chortle at about 11 o'clock a.m. And then what you do, you get ready for your gig, you just about pull yourself together, do your gig at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you're off at 5, go back in the kitchen, get absolutely fucked off your face again until 7 o'clock in the morning, do that every day for a month. Call that Edinburgh.
Well, okay.
Or you can do something productive with your time. I love Edinburgh.
Yeah, I was going to do a paid. I was going to do a paid show for the first time. I've always done
where
pay
you,
what
you
want.
Where were you going to do it?
The Underbelly.
Oh,
it was great, called. What was it called? Buttercup. The Underbelly Buttercup.
Yeah. That's the one that's not in the Underbelly, isn't it? That's the one that's in the courtyardy bit.
Yeah, it's not on Cowgate. Yeah, but I don't know why I'm talking about it. It's not happening.
What time are you not going to be doing it?
5:15 every day.
Any days off?
No.
No days off? The whole thing?
I can't remember. Probably one. Probably were you going to go up?
Yeah. We got them all off now.
Yeah. Were you going to go up this year?
No, I wasn't going to go. I wasn't going to go. Oh. You've always toured your shows as well, haven't you?
Yeah.
So I guess that's...
Three tours.
Yeah, but can you imagine, you know, you can tour your show without doing Edinburgh?
I could try.
Well, why wouldn't you?
I wouldn't have a show, that's the problem.
Well, you know, book yourself in for a week of work in progress. Mm. By the end of the week, you'll have a show and then take it on tour.
I could probably, yeah. It's weird.
You don't need to do Edinburgh to tour.
I kind of do, I think.
Why?
I don't have any fans.
Do you get return customers every time you tour?
Yes, but it's very up and down, all of it.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
But you know, you do it. I don't know anything about touring, really. I only just started touring myself. But I know that if you look at some of the great tourers. If you look at someone like Jimmy Carr, he will tour every year and he will go to the same place and people will go, right, December in Milton Keynes, we go and see Jimmy Carr. And they do it every year.
Does he do that every year?
Pretty much. And he does one tour and then by the end of that tour, he's written the new tour.
That's a lot of one-liners, isn't it?
Yeah, right. But he'll pretty much start... He'll start the next tour like the week after or the day after he's finished the last tour.
Yeah, he's always on tour.
He's always on tour. He's always doing it. And he builds an audience like that and people know that they that to expect him in their town, you know? I wouldn't worry so much about Edinburgh. You don't build a tour audience through Edinburgh necessarily.
Yeah, you're right. I've adapted now. I felt very bad when this whole lockdown thing first started. But I, you know, it's fine. I'm going to be a Twitch guy. I'm going to be a YouTuber, and I'm like an alt-right guy.
That's it.
That's all I watch.
Like an incel.
Yeah, I love them. Great boys. They should have a bigger platform.
That's a good way of building an audience.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, man. The few I'm not going to go into it, but the few people that have gone a little bit right wing in the comedy scene have really built an audience now.
Oh yeah.
Fair enough.
Absolutely. And I think that it's easy to forget about the lessons of the past, isn't it? But you know, Dapper Laughs, he built up a huge audience before he even stepped up on stage. Yeah. Yep. Just doing his little vines or whatever they were. So I think that, you know,
vines, yeah.
You don't want to forget, you know, big successful acts like that.
He Dapper Laughs gave him my first ever gig.
Did he? Where was that?
It was in, was it in South London? I can't remember. It was like an open mic night called Brand Spanking Comedy in, I think, 2013 was when I did my first one.
I didn't know he was sort of working regular clubs and things. I thought he only sort of toured under his own name.
Oh, no, he wasn't Dapper Laughs yet. He had his own name.
Okay.
Yeah. Very boring name. Not as good as Dapper Laughs. Dan something, I don't know. But he was running.
Why didn't he call himself Dapper Dan?
Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe Dapper Laughs implies that comedy.
Dapper Dan just sounds like a style guy.
It's a pomade.
Yeah. Dapper Dan. Yeah.
So, hang on, where are we? You were in Last Christmas.
Yeah.
Of course.
So tell us about that. Tell us about that. Nathaniel and Natalie were talking about how Natalie has seen it.
Oh, right.
Natalie hasn't seen it, but she might watch it at some point. And Nathaniel was saying that he might get around to seeing it at some point.
Well, I mean, it will be on every Christmas forever now. It will be on TV. So you can wait. I mean, you don't have to. But yeah, no, it was amazing.
It will get you at some point.
Oh, it will find you. Yeah, you don't have to find it.
But it will get you.
Yeah.
I saw Love Actually at the cinema, hated it, like with a passion. And I have seen it another 5 or 6 times since.
Oh, that's a proper... I mean, this is a bit like Love Actually. You know, it's one of those type of films. I'm a very, very minor character in it. My name is Oscar in the film. Mm-hmm. Because it was a colorblind casting. And... whenever I have colorblind castings where they don't care about how you look, I do quite well. But then when it's like an Asian character, it's always a bit crap.
Why?
Because the character's an idiot.
Oh, really?
Usually.
Well, it's written as an idiot.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very common.
And who is Oscar in Last Christmas?
Oscar? He is he's one of the friends of Emilia Clarke. Kate, she's called in the film. And she stays with him for a bit when she's going through a tough time. I'm in it for a very short time.
Go on.
I had a proper little bit along the speaking bit, but it got cut down, but it's fine. You know.
Well, you know, Miss Moneypenny, the original actress in Miss Moneypenny.
Well, no, but go on.
Well, you know, the woman that played her.
Yeah.
Nathaniel.
Yeah.
her running time in all of the James Bond films is something like 7 minutes.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Is it?
And you go, yeah, but you remember her.
Oh, that's interesting.
Do you know what I mean? It's not about how long you're on screen for. It's about what you do in there. Mm. Like that little kid in Back to the Future 3. he's in it for what, 40 seconds? And all he needs to do is point at his dick when he's on the train and remember him forever. So maybe you should do something like that.
Point at your dick during last Christmas.
When you're on screen in the background of a shot, point at your dick when someone else is talking. This is you could use this as one of your acting tips, mate. And point at your dick in the background of shot, and people will be talking about it for years and years to come.
Yes.
Did you do that during last Christmas?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So how long are you on screen for?
I'd say maybe 5 seconds or something.
Maybe a bit more.
I mean, three separate scenes. No, maybe 10. I don't know. But they're all very short little bits.
Obviously.
Yeah. like almost montage type, if you know what I mean.
I'm in 10, 11, 15 scenes. My screen time is 3 seconds. Yeah. Well, all right. Okay. That's great.
It's one of the best things I've ever done. It was mad because, like, I'm not an actor. You know, I just get to audition for bits occasionally. And I've not got anything that good.
You say that when you're in the auditions?
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. I had to, but all the audition was that I had to react to my fish dying. And I got it. Yeah. And then it was it was ridiculous. So last year I didn't have the best year professionally. It was just a bit rubbish, you know, but I got this film. My first day I went in, got my hair and makeup, went in to have my hair and makeup done. Emma Thompson was just there having her hair done. She knew my name and she thanked me for being in the film. Which is so weird.
What did you say?
Thanks for doing this. I said, it's okay. Yeah.
I should be so too.
Try and keep up, Emma. Watch me for the changes.
And then I met the director, Paul Feig, who's like a legend as well.
Yeah.
And again, he said, thanks so much for doing this.
It's nice. It shows him in a good light.
Oh, no. Everyone was very nice.
Yeah, of course.
So like, you just get to see yourself at the cinema, right?
Projecting yeah.
Huge.
Yeah, there was a special cast and crew screening I went along to. Yeah, that was fun. It was cool. Yeah, the whole thing is like I could boast about being working with Emma Thompson for at least another 5 years.
Sure.
If I do nothing else. You know what I mean?
Keep dropping it.
Yeah, it's a good thing. When my mum's friends like want to know what I'm doing, I just film with Emma Thompson.
Yeah.
But also, I bet you did a better performance, didn't you?
A better performance?
Yeah, because they were nice to you. You came in and they treated you like you were valued. And then you came in and you did a good performance because you're just like, they know my name. I belong here. And they're happy that I've turned up.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought of that.
Whereas if they'd have treated you like you're... I've done entire series with people that haven't even looked at me between takes. You know? And I can say that my performance did suffer for that. That person is a cunt, right? They are always going to be on the cunt list, and that was not me, right? And you have a choice professionally, right? Whereas what are you going to take away from that performance?
I hadn't thought of that at all. I did my first thing we filmed was a scene with Emilia Clarke, and she between takes she was very nice. It was just me and her doing this little scene. She was very friendly. We were just chatting about stuff. And then Paul Feig, even told us little things to say. Like, we didn't stick to the script at all. And none of that got used. But, like, it was such a nice experience. I got such a high off it. It was crazy.
Yeah, and I imagine that your performance was better for it.
Thank you.
Different ways of working. And not all experiences are like that. And so you're really lucky to have worked with some nice people. And I think the bigger you get, I've learned this in the last week. I've had some conversations with some people, like big names, and they're really great. And you learn through this industry and through working with people, you can learn from the worst people that you've worked with, and you can learn from the best people you've worked with. And I take all of that on board because you go, who do I want to be like? Well, I don't want to be like that. I want to be like that. And it brings the best out of people, and then everyone looks good.
Who do you want to be like?
Harry Hill.
Okay.
He's the nicest person in the industry that I've ever met.
Cool.
He's incredible. I've never met him. He's just incredibly encouraging. He's a proper, you know, he's really professional and he's really great. He brings the best out of people. You know, who do I not want to be like that? Who will end up in? So I'm not going to say.
I'll message you after.
I'll tell you as soon as we stop filming. We've got two more minutes. We've got basically a minute. Tell us about your Tom and Jerry audition.
Oh, okay. I just had to go in and do an American accent for a guy that works in a hotel, and I don't think I did that well. And
was
also,
the character working in a hotel, or was it a guy that worked in a hotel?
So I think the film is
just
set.
Have to like do an American accent to the guy on the door of a hotel to let.
No. The character. I think the film is set in a hotel. And,
of course, why not? It's Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
Floors are fun.
Chloe Grace Moretz. I think she's the main star.
What, she's Tom?
No.
Jerry.
I guess she's her own person.
She's not the ampersand.
I don't think Tom and Jerry speak.
Good.
I agree.
I watched Tom and Jerry. That's why I found out. I watched Tom and Jerry the movie. They start talking halfway through.
It's awful,
Oh, my fucking God. Tom sounds like Peter Griffin.
It's so bad. And they do that thing.
It's crazy.
They do that thing where they say, wait, you can talk?
It's awful. And then they talk the entire fucking film.
Yeah. But cats don't talk anyway.
No, terrible.
Well, mice don't talk either, Nat.
That's true.
Right, so definitely watch Bilal Zafar's Acting School of Excellence. It's on YouTube. It's really funny. It's great.
Should I play out with your song, Bilal?
Yes, please.
So thanks for coming on, Bilal.
Thank you for coming.
We'd love you to have you on a regular one when we're all out of this shit. Sure. And thanks for joining us in lockdown.
This is De La Soul Royalty Capes.
Ladies and gents, crystal caring pixie peasants and warriors, elders, ancestors, sons and daughters, lion-hearted kings and everything in between. Take a seat. Be witness.
You consider them kings, about to icing on cakes. Chariots cruise at tour the speeds. Lay your bifocals on royalties. Longer than Sears catalog, stern like matadors, infatigable actual LPs. Mirror the crimson tie, the color of the Rubik's. Them duplex views got your nose up, but cozy up to